Hello and welcome. We're going to give ladies a few more minutes to hop on. I'm going to raise my desk more. Now you can see my whole head. Welcome, Christine and Jen and Alexandria and Jamie. Welcome. So glad you're here. We're just gonna wait and see. I'm probably gonna go until like 5 after, so maybe about 3 more minutes before we start. So if you guys want to turn your cameras on and chat or ask questions in the chat or whatever, we can have a few minutes of hangout time. I already have a card drawn, Dave. Hey, Jamie.
Hi.
How's it
I just
going?
good. How about you?
I'm tired. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I understand.
Be really honest about that. But
Well,
okay. I'm tired, but okay.
hopefully you can get some rest either this evening, this weekend, soon.
Yeah. There's just stuff happening in my community that is hard. That's okay, Alex. You can chew with your camera on. We don't care.
I did want to say thank you. I haven't had time to email back, but thank you so much for the free 4-month subscription to the alumni group. I was so excited to get that email. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yay! I'm so glad. Yeah, I don't even know actually. David, when can they start coming to calls? Like this week when Feel Without Fear ends? Is that the plan?
I think in the email I said it was after the integration ceremony.
Okay. Well, that's next week. So, yeah. Well, that's great. Then that means the first call that you'll be able to come to is on Friday the 9th, and David is doing group Reiki on everybody. For that. So that'll be y'all's first one that you can come to. That's exciting. Reiki is like a once every few months thing. It's not something that happens regularly, but it's like a once every few months and it's that time. Today we had a call and we just did a sharing. They just did some really beautiful sharing about like how they're still living and applying Feel Without Fear in their lives and some changes that they've seen. And they made me cry today by sharing some of that stuff. So yeah. Hey, Betsy. Hey, Lenka. Welcome, y'all. If you can turn on your cameras, it'd be great. Tonight's workshop is my personal favorite of all of them. So I'm really excited. And yeah, part of me is like, start. And the other part's like, wait a couple more minutes. Like, I'm not sure. So I think I'm just gonna wait a couple of minutes. Yeah, it's hot as freak here, which it's like northern Minnesota hot. Like, it's like 87 degrees, but it's hot for us. Yeah, really hot, muggy, sticky. It feels like East Texas.
Yeah, whenever you're acclimated to extreme colds, the warm temperatures feel
Yeah.
extremely hot. So
Yeah. Like we used to live where it was like 105. Like, how do we do that? Well, we didn't have humidity. That's how.
yeah, it's in the low 90s here and it is humid and I've never gotten used to it like
What?
in the
Remind me
summer.
where you're at, Jamie.
Northeastern Kentucky.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
Yeah.
muggy. It is
Yeah,
muggy
very
there. It's
muggy.
like, it's like a swamp or something there, isn't it? Like, isn't it like real wet and
It's pretty
moist?
humid, and especially like with pop-up storms, like all throughout the summer, and it just like when the sun comes out after, like it is pretty intense.
Yeah, the sun after the rainstorm, I
Yeah.
know. Yeah. It's like turning on a hot humidifier. Okay. Well, I guess we're going to say that everyone who's here is here. And if somebody comes on late, then that is okay. All right. So, for those of you who have been following me, can you hear me okay? Or do I need to move this microphone closer to my face or push it further away? Do you like it closer?
Yes, closer. It's so much better.
I'm going to hit it. I promise you, because I talk with my hands so much, I'm going to hit it and it's going to make that sound. So maybe I'll just like push it a little bit further away. Okay, so for those of you who are following me on Instagram and watch my stuff regularly, you may have noticed that there have been some allusions to my own abandonment stuff getting poked right now. There's a situation happening in our local, very tiny, tiny community that involves people that I'm very, very close to. And things are not good right now. And it's been a rough few weeks. The situation started about 6 weeks ago, but it's kind of been building for about 5 years. And then, like 6 weeks ago, the shit hit the fan. And so things are just really uncertain right now. And it involves some of the people that I'm the closest to. So even though the situation isn't about me at all, and I really don't have anything to do with it, my like perspective and things that I've been like breadcrumbs I've been dropping for the last 5 years about a specific person in our community, like it's now coming that I was right all along. Like everything that I said, I was right. And now it's like times 100. And like kind of having those gentle, like I told you so kind of conversations with people has been really, really tough. And so, you know, my pattern, as much as I have awareness of it and have language about it and communicate about it and can feel it and ask for what I need and hear the voices in my head and all of that, like the pattern in my body, the automatic hardwired response is whenever I need to say something that I know someone isn't going to like, all of that fear of like, this is going to disappoint them and they're going to leave me, that they're going to hate me, they're going to feel like I betrayed them, they're going to insert worst case scenario here, right? And you know, that's why I'm so clear about that Fuel Without Fear is not offering any kind of promise to fix anybody, because if it was fixing things, like I would be fixed. You know what I mean? Like I would be fixed. And but I don't see getting triggered in abandonment ways as being anything that's broken about me. And that's the gift that Fuel Without Fear has given me. Not that I don't experience that ever, but that when I do, I'm not like, oh my God, something's wrong with me. I'm still broken. I need another thing to fix me. You know, shaming myself, beating myself up, thinking I'm not healed, thinking I've never made progress, like da 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 da. And so yeah, the place where I've been in this whole situation is kind of feeling like the line between my integrity and my authenticity and the timing of saying something like feels very blurry to me. And I've been having moments of like high anxiety where I'm really in my head overthinking, catastrophizing on what if they leave me, what if they abandon me, what if they think I betrayed them, what if, feeling the ugh in my throat and like the I don't know, anybody else get the pulse of electricity from solar plexus to the whole outside of your body and it feels like prickles all over? Yeah, lots of those lately. Super fun. Yeah, just a lot of somatic stuff happening. And it's like being able to observe myself and watch my Feel Without Fear stuff in action. I'm really, really proud of myself because it's like I know I need to say this thing to someone, which I did today. I needed to say this hard but honest thing. And I knew they weren't going to like it. I knew it was probably going to hurt. I knew that by saying so, I was violating a boundary that had been put in place years ago that I had adhered to. But not saying something was like, this doesn't feel authentic. Like, I feel like I'm being dishonest around this person because I'm holding this in and I have this thing I want to say and I'm not letting myself say it. And at the same time, the not letting myself say it wasn't from a place of judgment of like, should I say something or shouldn't I say something? I'm stuck. I watched myself go from that stuck place of should I, shouldn't I? What should I do? Should I say something? Oh my God, I'm stuck. Ugh. I watched myself go from that to like, wait, slow it down. Your body is asking for discernment here. Like, yes, you need to say something, but you also need to discern the timing and you need to wait for a better moment. And you need to be attuned to this person's nervous system so that you catch them in a state where they're not activated. And like being able to feel into that underneath all of the fear is like tapping into such deep body wisdom, you know, because there is wisdom in like waiting for the right timing of something. And when you have anxiety, everything feels urgent. Everything feels like it has to happen right fucking now, or you're gonna explode, or you're gonna lose your shit, or whatever. Like it has to happen right now. And I could feel that happening. And I was like, okay, back it off. This situation is just at the beginning. You are just at the beginning of this. This is going to take months, if not years, to work through. Back off on the anxiety. You need that energy to persevere through this for the long term. Like, and that shifted in my body, just like being aware of where the energy was in anxiety and making the choice to turn it into, I got to back off here on the gas a little bit because I need a lot of energy to persevere through this situation. And then feeling when I was in judgment and stuck in stories and should I and shouldn't I and all of that. And then be able to shift it into like, thank you, body, for slowing me down and putting me in a perfect space to discern the timing and this person's nervous system and my own self. And like, thank you so much. Like, it works. Like, it fucking works. It doesn't mean that this situations like this never happen. Like, this is just life. It's just life. Like nobody did anything wrong here. Like it's just life. Shit happens. And how we react and show up as the shit is happening is what makes all the difference. And being able to feel those subtle things of how you can shift anxiety into like, all right, I'm in this for the long haul, or judgment as like, okay, I'm really going to be judicious here, or anger as like, I really need to stand up and assert myself and use my voice and have some boundaries here, or what I'm feeling with my anger is actually like, I'm feeling called to step up and lead in my community and like help facilitate some of the healing that needs to happen in my community. That's going to require a lot of communication that I'm good at. So, like, I need that mobilization to give me the energy I need to play that role in my community. So, like, it really is just about being able to catch the energy of whatever is coming through, which requires feeling, and then responding in a more conscious, authentic way is really what it is. It's what it's all about. And it changes your relationship with yourself. It changes your relationship with other people. It changes your relationship with how you relate to the planet. Like it changes everything because not everything is a trauma response and not everything is a conflict and not everything is urgent. And it's just like sometimes shit happens and we're doing our best to get through it. And maybe this time around, we're navigating it a little differently than we did last time. Or maybe we have better communication skills this time than what we used to have. Or maybe our window of tolerance is bigger than what it used to be. And those little things that don't seem significant, let me tell you something. As someone who, if this was happening 4 years ago in my life, what's happening right now? I don't even know the train wreck that I would feel right now. Like, I would feel so taken down, like overwhelmed, cancel everything. I can't do anything. I'm exhausted. Like, yeah, I'm tired. Like, but that's not what's happening because I've learned how to relate to my own feelings and fears differently. It doesn't mean they're gone. It just means that I am a different person in them in a way that feels much more authentic and less patterned and programmed and reactive. Okay. I think that was my thing that I was feeling led to say. Did that resonate for anyone, or did I just need to get that out for myself? Okay. So with that said, before we hopped on tonight, I pulled out my Isis deck, and my intention was to just draw a card for myself. So I invited my guides in and my ancestors, and it's like Isis is one of my guides. And I was like, I need just like, I need some wisdom or some clarity or some capacity because I want to show up and be my best for these people because they deserve that. It's their last workshop. Like I want to do end it well, you know? And this is the card that I drew. It's called the Dark Mysteries. Enter the chamber of the dark goddess. You don't have to believe in Isis or gods or goddesses to get something out of this. So just in case there's like a ugh, happening, just change the words out for whatever you feel comfortable with. But not only did this speak to me hugely, as I was reading it, I was like, oh my God, this literally encompasses what tonight is about. And I couldn't have drawn a more perfect card. So please receive this if you wish, and know that this fully supports what you're going to be learning tonight and what I hope you embody in the future. The Dark Mysteries. The Dark Goddess calls you to her inner chamber where she holds a test and a gift for you. The test is your willingness to meet and release the fears within that have been secretly holding you back. The gift is freedom, peace, opportunity, and prosperity in all its forms. Will you accept her call? Your time for deeper initiation is here. When the Dark Goddess calls you, it is a life-changing experience. It is not always easy, but the rewards for those brave enough to answer her call and enter her inner chamber are tremendous indeed. The rewards are a life lived more fearlessly, the gift of loving and being just who you are in truth without having to impress or bow to another out of fear of rejection. It is a more open and expansive way to live, and it attracts the bounty of the Dark Mother, her gifts of love, opportunity, peace and prosperity, well-being and wisdom. It takes a strong soul to go through this test and into the liberation it delivers, but you are ready, dear initiate of the light. The Dark Goddess calls you to initiation when you have been working on your own shadow, bringing your whole self to light. P.S. Everything we've done in this has been shadow work. Gotcha, bitch. working on your own shadow, bringing your whole self to light. During such times, we often need help as shadow work can be uncomfortable, painful, or just quite difficult to undertake as we are working with unconscious material, trying to bring it into the light of our conscious awareness. Working with the shadow, the parts of us that we have deemed unlovable or the parts that seem too marvelous to actually be us requires courage. The Dark Goddess will call you when your own shadow needs healing and integration, when something within is holding you back, when instead, if acknowledged and brought into the light of awareness, it could actually help you move forward. Often, the shadow element that needs integration when the Dark Goddess is present is power in some form or other. It may be personal power, spiritual power, or your relationship to power that needs to change for you to blossom and for life and its gifts to manifest more abundantly for you. Becoming more powerful does not necessarily mean gaining more force. More often, for advanced souls, it actually means surrendering our will into alignment with greater forces of divine will, allowing us to consciously participate in the flow of life, sensing the signs and nudges that lead us towards our greatest manifestation of soul in this lifetime. Often, when we are reclaiming our power and defining for ourselves what it is to be powerful, we are confronted with fears of loss, failure, abandonment, and rejection. It can be painful at times, but accepting and releasing the pain brings such deep relief and happiness to the self. It is good to confront these fears with a loving and firm approach and be open to taking risks in growing anyway. This is what Isis, as the Dark Goddess, teaches us, not to be afraid to go into the dark places and the difficult feelings within. They may seem ugly at first, yet if we allow ourselves to go there with some conscious awareness in place, we can realize that these parts of us just need love and acceptance, and those parts that we once reviled often blossom and turn into our greatest assets in a more conscious, helpful version of themselves. We need radical trust to do this inner work and take her initiation. The Dark Goddess will support and nurture you through her tests as she guides you to receive the gift of more of yourself. no longer shackled in fear and hidden away, but ready to be in the world with brightness and vigor. Hope that was helpful. All right, let's go. Time to start. Me just fix my view on my screen here.
Lindsay, was that caught on the recording?
Yeah, it was.
Okay,
Yeah. All right, here we go, guys. We can see this, yes? Great. Now I can see all of you. Here we go. So, oh, I don't like this up here. I want this to go away. Okay. All right. So here's your last about me that you get. I love the female body. I'm very bisexual. I love watching the female body. I love watching the female body dance. I love all forms of dance involving women, especially ballet, strip, pole, and burlesque. I have also been obsessed with birth for my entire life. I have seen like every birth documentary that you could ever have. I'm pretty sure I was a midwife in my past life, or like I'm going to be a midwife in my next life or something, because the call to like be a birth worker is so strong in me. So yeah, that is, I love working with women. Like, women are my favorite to work with. It's not to say I don't love working with men. I do. I have male clients. They're amazing, but I just have a heart for women and healing. Yeah, we're gonna skip to this. This is our final workshop, y'all. It's a little sad for me. Our final group coaching call is next week, August 6th at 10 a.m. Central. And then the very next day on Wednesday the 7th, we will have our final integration ceremony. This will be a time where you are welcome to share, if you like, what you have learned, what is different, what feels better, where you're still working, how you've changed. If you would like to ask questions, you can do that. So we'll spend about the first 45 minutes just having like a time for sharing. If you do say something really great about Feel Without Fear, you're going to be recorded, and I'm probably going to use it for some marketing purpose at some point. So if you don't want that, then just tell me so that we know we need to edit it out. And so the first 45 minutes will be just a sharing time, and then the second 45 minutes will be an embodiment practice, which we will do for 45 full minutes. And it's to music, and everyone has to have their camera on so that everyone feels safe. So yeah, I hope you show up. If it scares you to have your camera on and move in front of people, just know that nobody's watching you. But for everyone's like feeling of safety, I don't want a black box on there with people going, "Is somebody actually doing this?" But they're not doing it, but they're watching me, you know? Like that can be like weird for some people. So everyone will have to have their camera on. I promise it's not scary, even if it sounds scary. I have a magical playlist for it. We will be moving our way through the polyvagal ladder, essentially, and like embodying all different aspects of different states of the nervous system and the emotions that go with them. So that is Wednesday, August 7th at 5. That will be our last call together. And then you all got the email inviting you to participate in the alumni membership for 4 months for free. So you get a free 4 month trial at the end of 4 months. If you want to stay in the Feel Without Fear alumni membership, then it's $55 a month. After that, you get access to everything. We have like three calls a month. They typically last 90 minutes to 2 hours each. We also have a Voxer channel for the group that we check in on quite regularly. It's a great place to be. And everyone in it has been through Feel Without Fear. So we speak similar language. We've had similar experiences. It's just a great community space. All right, so tonight's workshop is going to center a lot around what I call lifestyle inflammation. This is a concept that dropped into my awareness a few years ago, and it's basically anything, any aspect of your life that doesn't support the healing and the life you want to create and live with purpose. It's also the stuff that isn't aligned with our authenticity. So, lifestyle inflammation can be relationships, diet, how you spend your time. I'm gonna give you lots of examples of what it could be. So, You've probably heard of the standard American diet. If you've done my nervous system 101 workshop, you've seen this slide before. So the standard American diet is also called the SAD diet. This is a very normal way that a lot of people in the US eat. It's very processed, it's very high in carbs and low in plant foods. There's a lot of sugar, there's a lot of seed oils, a lot of additives and artificial ingredients and other things that you can't pronounce. It's basically like eating dead food that's very poor in nutrients and minerals and things like that. And then the standard American lifestyle is also another kind of SAD. It's mostly sedentary, not a lot of time in nature. There's disconnection from community. We're overworked and overscheduled. We're all living under capitalism and doing the best we can. We're on screens all the time. Women have been sold this like girl boss hustle thing that like puts us in our masculine and overworks us and makes us tired. It's just a really hard lifestyle to live. Like, it's not how we were meant to be free on this earth. And it's outside the scope of this workshop, but of course, like very standard parts of our lifestyle in America. And I'm not sure about other countries because I haven't been to many other countries. I've certainly never lived in other countries. But we have to also acknowledge like the stress and trauma of things that we individually don't have a lot of control over, but that affect us anyway. So that's things like, COVID lockdowns that affected everyone to some degree, and it was totally out of our control. Climate change, political polarization. It's an election year, so that's been happening a lot. There's nothing we can do about that except for choose if we're going to tune into it or not. Cancel culture, systemic racism, political corruption, the economy that we're all feeling affected by, lack of affordable healthcare, wealth inequality, food deserts, patriarchy, unethical social media companies, institutionalized education system. We don't have control over any of these things, but we've probably all been influenced by them in some way or another to varying degrees. And because there's so many of these things about life that are outside of our control, but that can still cause us a lot of stress, it is so imperative that we take the best care of our nervous systems that we possibly can, because our nervous systems are a resource to deal with stress. They're literally the only way that we deal with stress. So we build our resiliency in community, and that is how we take back the power that we have. This hyper individualistic, every man for himself, like very selfish and disconnected way of being that most of us live in is really not how we live in resiliency. That's actually a very non-resilient way of living, because then all the pressure to provide for everything is on you, versus in community, that responsibility is more spread out. But for the individual things that we do have control over, we cannot heal in the same environment or lifestyle that made us sick. And the goal of healing is not to get back to normal. So if there's any part of you that's like, okay, there's this imaginary point in my healing journey that when I get to it, I get to go back to normal. Like, no. No. Normal is dysregulating. Like, everybody that lives a normal life eats standard American food and has a standard American lifestyle. It's the hustle and grind. They're asleep, not actually asleep, but like, they're not aware of themselves. They don't have like normal people don't live in the space of like, isn't this interesting? Like, I wonder why this. I'm curious about this. What purpose does this serve? Oh, I noticed this voice in my head. Like, this is not normal shit that you're learning here, right? This is kind of fringe stuff still, although it's becoming more normal. Normal is being undernourished. Normal is exhausted. Normal is hustling and grinding and girl bossing and, all of that. That's normal. It's awful. And since we know our bodies speak to us through our nervous systems, and that feeling and sensation and symptoms are the language of our bodies, they're the messengers that are telling us we need to slow down or stop or pivot or, change whatever isn't aligned with our authenticity. So when we reduce lifestyle inflammation, we have to have a willingness to be in awareness of ourselves and be curious about our lives, our choices, our relationships, literally everything. Like, if you are unwilling to be curious about a certain aspect of your life, that's a little bit of a yellow flag that there's some kind of attachment or like ego story or fear or something's there, right? Like, we need to be able to go to all the dark closets in our lives and like open the door and turn the light on and see what's there and like see if it's actually a part of our authenticity or if it's not. Reducing lifestyle inflammation requires being radically honest about what is and isn't aligned with our authenticity. And sometimes we're not honest because we're afraid we're going to get abandoned. So we become this other version of ourselves that's more pleasing to other people rather than being who we actually are and letting those relationships fall away, not because we're mad, but because they just aren't aligned. Reducing lifestyle inflammation obviously requires personal responsibility and agency to make choices that are within our power and are congruent with our authenticity. So, with awareness and curiosity, we have to evaluate relationships, how we spend our time, our screen use, our schedules, our food and movement choices, the environments of our homes. I mean, I'm talking all the way down to like being curious about like your paint color. I mean, I have literally had an acid trip where like the medicine confronted me with like, why do you have this couch in here when nobody ever sits on it? And do you want your walls to all be white? Like, really? And it was confronting me with where I was not putting magic into my house because I was still in this story of like, what if we have to sell it one day and this doesn't add to the resale value? That's not authentic. Like, authentic me is like, let's put magic shit everywhere. Like, not let's dumb down and dim down the magic in order to present this like real estate listing ready. Weird version of our house, right? So I'm talking about even little things. It's not just big things like should I be in my marriage or not? It's like little things. Is this what I would really choose to wear? Is this how the authentic me wants to dress? Does this actually feel good on my body? Like, am I still dressing for the male gaze and I don't even realize it? Like, that's something that I've just recently stepped out of in the last couple of years is like no longer dressing for the male gaze. Like, I'm no longer dressing based on what my butt looks like in a pair of jeans. I don't really even wear jeans anymore. I'm no longer like using push-up bras and Spanx and like contour things and like shit like that. Like, I'm like, no, all of that is just to make my body more acceptable to the male gaze. Like, it's not comfortable, you know? So I wear like drawstring pants and baggy things, and that's what feels good to me. But it took me a while to get there because I was so in the rut of, well, this is how we dress. We dress because people look at us and we need to look our best or we need to look a certain way or fit into a certain body type or whatever. Evaluating your schedule and your screen use. It's like being on your phone for 6 hours a day is probably a source of lifestyle inflammation because that's 6 hours a day that you could probably use to be in nature or try on clothes that you like that aren't for the male gaze, or, you know, like go for a walk or spend time with a friend or play or whatever. With awareness and curiosity, we have to prioritize and create time for rest, relaxation, play, and pleasure by ourselves and with our communities. Like, we need to be having fun and relaxing with people as well as with ourselves. We have to use our agency to set boundaries and say no to people and things so that we can say yes to honoring ourselves and creating that life we want, right? Like, I have to be willing to risk that someone's going to be upset with me when I say, no, I actually can't hang out with you. It's my only afternoon off this week, and I'm going to go lay on the beach at the lake. Like, I have to risk that might not be pleasing to them. They might feel some kind of way about that. And also, that choice is what feels within my authenticity. And it feels really inauthentic to spend time with them out of obligation. With awareness and curiosity, we have to reduce focus on things outside of ourselves. We have to stop focusing on social media, on news, on problems we can't solve in the world, on things we don't have control over. We even have to stop participating in certain forms of activism if it's creating lifestyle inflammation. Like, I lived through a cancellation in 2020 and 2021. I know how inflamed the lifestyles of activists are on the internet. It's insane. Those people have a lot of lifestyle and they're really dysregulated, and that's where they're channeling all of dysregulation. All right. So I'm curious if you want to chime in the chat, you can. If not, that's okay. Anybody got any voices in their head? A lot of times at this point in the workshop, the voice in the head for people with relationship anxiety is they're immediately like, should I be with my partner or should I not? Like that comes up a lot. Lenka says that's my biggest challenge, resistance. Yeah. You've cleared out too much inflammation. What do you mean? You can unmute yourself if you want.
Yeah, I feel like the past 6 months I've just been like cutting things out of my life bit by bit, and I'm at a point where there's not that much left. I think I needed to do it for a while, but yeah, I wonder if whether there's a reintroduction period at some
Yeah.
point.
When you feel like you have the capacity for it. Absolutely. When it feels authentic.
Yeah, and I think
When
that's
it.
but I've been trying to push previously when it's not being authentic, and this is what I'm trying to listen to now. Like, when does it actually feel authentic to reintroduce that
Yes.
versus like trying it and then just burning myself out really quickly?
Yeah. It's not about should I do this? Should I not do this? Am I ready for this? Am I not ready for this? That's going to get you stuck in judgment. It is literally as simple as what would the highest, wisest, most loving and trusting part of myself choose right now? And if right now that part of yourself is like, yeah, add some more stuff. You've got the capacity for it. You need some fun. You need some play. Like, go have a drink every once in a while. It's not that big of a deal. Like, if that feels authentic, amazing. And if it doesn't, then do whatever feels authentic. Yeah, the should voice screams and loves to overtake it. Of course it does. Of course. Lenka says the vulnerability of choosing myself and my own life, it is super scary. Lenka, it really is. Because you can get to a point in choosing yourself where it no longer feels authentic to be around certain people in your life. You know, where it just doesn't align anymore. And it's not because you're mad at them or because you guys have had a conflict or something. It's just because, like, there are certain relationships where I cannot be in my authenticity and coexist with this person in their authenticity. Our authenticity just isn't congruent. And that doesn't mean anybody's bad or wrong or to blame or like anything like that. It literally just means, like, if our authenticity isn't congruent in a way that feels nourishing for both of us, then this relationship or this whatever might not be for us, you know? And I know that's scary too. Yeah, we did go through that whenever we deconstructed our fundamentalist Christian upbringing. A very big, yeah, Jen, I will check my email. Thanks for letting me know because I have not checked my email in a few hours. Yeah, it is scary that we're going to rock everything we've built. But some of it was not built with authenticity. Some of it was built as an adaptation. Some of it was built as a coping mechanism. Some of it was built to keep us from being uncomfortable, right? And like those are the parts that we're slowly taking off the shelf and being like, do I need this in my life? Or is this just here because it helps me avoid being uncomfortable? You know, like, that can be really hard sometimes. All right. So here's some examples of questions you can ask yourself when you're evaluating your life neutrally, hopefully. Is every hour of your day filled with something? Do you have spaciousness in your days for rest or play or enjoyment? Are you super busy working for things to pay for them, but that you don't have time to actually enjoy them? And I am also talking about, like, are you working so much that you don't even have time to enjoy being home? Like, you pay for your home too. You should be able to enjoy being in it and not be so busy that you can't. Are your kids involved in a lot of extracurriculars and you feel like a taxi driver and you're like in the car all the time? Does your commute take up a good portion of your time and cuts into your time for rest or play or relaxing? How much time are you actually spending on your phone? Do you spend time on your screen at the expense of rest and play and pleasure? Does it become the mindless activity rather than the conscious choice? Do you and your partner frequently argue over being exhausted and stretched too thin, but you don't know how to live a different way? And maybe you guys are having like circular conversations about that. Is your diet full of shit? How much time do you spend outside? How are your boundaries? All things to ask and more. down to, do I like the way this clothing fits and feels? Do I like this color on my wall? What would the highest, wisest, most loving and trusting part of myself paint this wall? My highest, wisest, most loving, trusting part wants to put wallpaper on that wall over there and then paint the back of the bookshelves black. That's what mine wants to do right now. All right, now let's talk about some not so obvious sources of lifestyle inflammation. I want to tell you a true story. I didn't even change their name, about someone I know. So Jared, real name, real guy, is quite wealthy. He and his wife own a multi-million dollar home in one of the nicest neighborhoods of Austin, Texas. Jared and his wife both work from home and they're both making six-figure incomes. They have plenty of workspace. Their home is large. They have privacy. They have a lovely yard. They live in a safe neighborhood. They only have one child living at home, and their child is in school full time. They frequently spend their weekends taking their son to private league soccer tournaments. So their weekends are almost always in a hotel away from home, not resting and relaxing. They're at soccer tournaments. They also own a million-dollar Airbnb. And when they're not taking their son to soccer tournaments on the weekends, they spend their other free weekends doing laundry and cleaning the Airbnb. It's rented out about 90% of the time. So there's a lot of guest turnover, which means there's a lot of cleaning and a lot of laundry. Their Airbnb is actually on Lake Travis, which is like the big main lake around Austin. There's a lot of skiing and boating and fishing and water sports and stuff like that. And this house is right on that lake. Jared's job requires him to meet in-person clients all over the country at least 10 days per month. So at least 10 days out of the month, he's not even home. And he often stays up late answering work emails. So although Jared and his family live in a beautiful, newly remodeled home, the small finishing details, like hanging up bathroom mirrors and pictures on the wall and unpacking boxes, haven't happened despite living there for, this is now not 18 months, this is now 2 years. So they've lived there 2 years. They still haven't hung the mirrors on the bathroom wall. They still haven't put pictures up. They still haven't unpacked all their boxes. Jared has difficulty sleeping and he experiences anxiety most of the time. His life is fast-paced and urgent with a lot of financial and relational pressure. His words to me were, "I feel like I'm buzzing inside all the time. I'm exhausted, but I can't sleep. I'm worried about all the financial commitments I have, but this is just how you make money, so I hope it gets easier." So Jared's nervous system is screaming at him, right? I'm using this example on purpose because when I talk about lifestyle inflammation, I usually hear the most pushback from people who have a lower income because they don't have the money to do less or to work less. And so that often becomes a like, well, that's good for people who have money because you can afford to take time off, or you can afford to pay for help, or you can afford this or that or whatever. But I can't. So, there's something wrong there. Lower income people can't afford to pay for coaching out of pocket or can't afford therapy without insurance sometimes. And I have a lot of compassion and understanding for that. But lifestyle inflammation doesn't have an income bracket. You can have lifestyle inflammation, as this example proves. You can have nice things and plenty of money, and your nervous system can still be incredibly, incredibly dysregulated. I have a gnat in my office just buzzing in front of my face. He's not struggling for money. He's struggling for time and for rest. Many people would look at Jared's life and feel jealous. Like, what does he have to lo lose sleep over? He has it all. He's got money. He's married. He's got a kid. He drives nice cars, a beautiful home, friends, a country club membership, a second home, a rental income. He's so privileged. Some of us out here are barely surviving. We're barely making ends meet. Like, that would be something that a lot of people would look at Jared and judge about him. But underneath all of that success is a man who is buckling under the weight of perfectionism, overachieving, and workaholism. His trauma response is to do everything and add more to his plate to prove that he can succeed. He has a privileged life from the standpoint of wealth, but in many ways, he isn't privileged at all. He bases his worth in being a high-performance moneymaker. He rarely spends time in nature. When his insomnia is particularly bad, he uses benzos and/or alcohol to sleep. He has plenty of money, but he has no time, no space to just be. He is not living a life. He is surviving as a millionaire. It's very, very sad. It's not like I've been in that home or in this environment. It's not a peaceful environment to be in. And I don't mean that it's filled with conflict. I mean, there's just an energy in homes with people who live like this, regardless of how much money they have. Jared has an extremely inflammatory lifestyle. Jared is my older stepbrother, by the way. So even if Jared had the perfect diet and went to the gym 5 days a week, even if he saw a therapist, if he had the time, even though his material needs are met, this kind of lifestyle is not sustainable at all. Neither medication nor meditation would give Jared the spare time, energy, and rest his body is craving. Jared doesn't need nervous system tools. Jared needs to take responsibility for how out of control his life has become and for why he believes he needs to be a workaholic to prove his worth. Because that pattern is what's driving the stress and the urgency and the anxiety in his life. There is no protocol, coach, therapy, meditation, breathwork, yoga class, diet, supplement, whatever, that will shift your nervous system as much as having an awareness of lifestyle inflammation and taking tangible action steps to reduce it. This requires time, intention, patience, and even risking looking weird to other people and having other people question your choices. But it is possible. So hopefully it's obvious that Jared has a lot of lifestyle inflammation, right? He's a workaholic. He's constantly busy. He has no time outside. He's never just being. These are pretty obvious sources of lifestyle inflammation. But I theorize that the healing journey itself, for many of us, has become a less obvious source of lifestyle inflammation. More than how much money, time, or energy we have, more than who we marry or who we live with, more than what we eat, without awareness, our trauma responses unconsciously create our lives. And our lives become a living reflection of the adaptations and unconscious coping mechanisms that we've learned in order to survive a dysfunctional upbringing. I can guarantee you, every area of your life that is not conscious to you is a living reflection of where you have had to adapt to survive. These adaptations and coping mechanisms follow us into the healing journey also. They will come up. So, here are some examples of how these adaptive patterns follow us into the healing journey. We become obsessed with healing all the things. Jamie's nodding. Yes, this is happening. We begin outsourcing our wellness, our power, our safety to coaches and therapists and Instagram accounts. When we get triggered, we have this belief, oh no, I'm still not healed. I have more work to do. We're always needing to try the latest nervous system modality, the latest vagus nerve reset, the latest therapy, because our famous last words are, I've tried everything else and nothing works, because so I have to do more things. There is a sense of urgency, like there's a clock ticking on healing, like we have to figure it out in a certain amount of time in order to live our lives. We can be very hypervigilant with ourselves. We could be frequently checking in to make sure that the anxiety or the freeze or the panic attack or the whatever isn't coming back. We can feel especially validated when people feel sorry for us and tell us how sorry they are for what we're going through and how difficult it is. Our inner critic becomes especially loud and busy about how you haven't healed enough yet. You'll start hearing stories about, like, you haven't healed enough yet. And, like, it just reflects where you're not enough and everywhere else, right? But now the inner critic has a new thing to focus on, and it's you not healing enough. You're still wanting to control your emotional experiences. You're really overly sensitive. You're dissociating into the healing journey. Your obsession has switched from health Facebook groups and Instagram accounts to healing journey groups and accounts. Like, you're no longer on the supplement thing, but now you're on the, like, spiritual energy worker shit, right? And the trauma healing and the nervous system shit. You have little to no interest in non-spiritual activities, and you may be suffering from spiritual perfectionism as well. You have little to no interest in activities and hobbies which are unrelated to healing. So maybe your hobby is, crystals and oracle cards and journaling and, whatever, but that's totally related to all of this. Like, it's still related to the healing journey. And maybe you have a rigidity with your nervous system routine or tools. Okay. Do you see how familiar unconscious trauma responses and adaptations can quickly take over the healing journey and cause you to unconsciously jump on the trauma healing hamster wheel? Everything becomes about healing my nervous system, healing my trauma, overcoming this, overcoming that, not feeling this anymore, not feeling that anymore. Relationship anxiety, health anxiety, financial anxiety. Like everybody else is manifesting shit. And you're like, oh my God, I'm not manifesting anything. There's something wrong with me, right? Like it's crazy, right? Do you see how that could create some lifestyle inflammation? You're not just living. You're not simply being when you're on that trauma healing hamster wheel of I have to fix myself all the time. Kind of sounds like health anxiety, except it's like healing journey anxiety. Okay, this is resonating. I can tell. Jamie's like, yes, bitch. Okay, so I have shared with you guys all through this journey that one of the things that heavily informs what I teach and feel without fear is my own journey through abandonment shit, specifically with my mom. And I shared that in September of 2022, my mom had a back surgery. I'm going to stop sharing my screen for a second so that I can just talk to you. In September of 2022, my mom had a back surgery. She asked me to come down and stay with her for 2 weeks to help her out because it was a pretty big surgery. So I did. And we had several incidences while I was there where, to speak to my mom's defense, I guess, like my mom had not seen me in person for 2 years prior to this because of COVID. And so from 2020 to 2022, like I wasn't even the same person anymore. Like I had been just like growing, leveling up, healing like crazy, learning to set boundaries, learning to, live in awareness, learning to be curious. Like that's what I've been doing for 2 years, like as my full-time job, basically. So the version of Lindsay that my mom got in September of 2022 was a totally different version than the one she got in the fall of 2020. The version of Lindsay that she got in 2022 was a version who knows how to set boundaries. And when my mom called me too sensitive, I spoke up for myself. My mom had experiences with me that she'd never had before. And of course, her nervous system didn't know how to deal with that. So we had some conflict. I flew home after 2 weeks, and then my mom didn't talk to me after that. Didn't talk to me, didn't talk to me, didn't talk to me. 7 months later, I got an email where she was really defensive and upset, and just like, the way you treated me the last time you were here was horrible. I will never accept this kind of treatment from you ever again. If you don't have anything nice to say, and if you can't apologize, don't bother responding. Like that was what I got 7 months later. So I was like, okay, she's still angry. Like I'm gonna just give her the space. There was never a conversation had about taking space from each other or going no contact or anything like that. But that's not my mom's MO. My mom's MO is the silent treatment. And so whenever I was calling and texting and I was getting very short one-word answers after I got home, I recognized that she was going into giving me the silent treatment. And so I honored that. So 7 months later, I got an email. A few months after that was my birthday. I asked if we could talk on my birthday, and she said, yes, I'll get back to you. And then she never did. Month and a half later was her birthday. I texted her and wished her a happy birthday. That was all that was said. Finally, in February of this year, so a year and a half of no contact with my mom, she called. We decided to have a phone call and we talked about it. And I wouldn't say everything is hunky dory, but I don't actually have an attachment to how my relationship with my mom is at this point. Like, I healed so much of the parts of me that needed her. And that needed her to meet a need for me, that I really don't have any of those expectations or attachments to that outcome anymore. And so, like, I have accepted that my mom is the way she is, and she's probably never going to do the kind of work that we're all doing, and that doesn't make her bad or wrong or anything, but that means that there may always be a misalignment between the two of us. I may not be able to exist in my authenticity around her fully. And obviously that's a choice I have to make. So, anyway, to back up, this slide said I had a big aha moment. When I was in the midst, I would say this was towards the end of the first year, when she hadn't talked to me. So this was probably the fall of 2023. The whole year that she hadn't talked to me, my abandonment shit was on the surface all the time. And it was like so easily triggered. Cause I was really sensitive about it. Cause I was literally like processing, grieving, letting go and angering about a relationship with my mother, you know, that's 40 years old, at that point. And so it makes sense why I would be a lot more sensitive and hypervigilant. And of course that would come up in my most important attachment relationships, which is with David and Honor. My best friend is Honor. And so we were in Honor's kitchen one day and my abandonment trigger got poked again. And at this point, it wasn't like I was triggered, like I was crazy or crying or like having a big reaction. It was more just like an internal experience that I was having, that I was having difficulty verbalizing and communicating about. But I dug deep within and I just cried at her kitchen island. And I was like, I just don't understand why, like, I keep getting so triggered. It's not for lack of awareness. It's not because I don't have language to describe it. It's not because I can't communicate about it. It's not because like you guys are a problem in any way. It like, I literally don't know, like, what is it? What is it that is holding me back in this? Why can't I like overcome this? And Honor's answer to me was like one of the most compassionate, validating, understanding things I'd ever heard. And she said, "Have you considered that it's a scar?" And I was like, "No." Why would I? What do you mean? Right? Like it had never, ever even entered my awareness. So I'll go back to sharing. Whoops. Oh, sorry. Over here. That's where I need to be. There. And David, after she said, "Have you considered it might be a scar?" David said, "Sounds kind of like a hamster wheel, huh?" And of course I was like, "Fuck you." Cause it was like, I got called out. That's what was happening. And I was on a hamster wheel, despite being on Instagram all the time, being like, "Get off the healing hamster wheel." Like I was on this hamster wheel of like, I have to somehow stay on this wheel until I figure out how to never be triggered again. And Honor offered this compassionate, like, maybe it's a scar. What if it's a scar? Right? So like, whatever your thing is that you came here hoping to fix, that's my question to you. Like, what if it's a scar? Does that bring up anything? Like, oh shit, or I don't want to accept that, or resistance? Yeah. So David and Honor's curious questions brought me into awareness that I was indeed on a trauma healing hamster wheel with this abandonment shit. So for weeks after that, I sat with their questions. What if it's a scar? What if I'm on a trauma healing hamster wheel? And what it would mean to have a scar that people can't see? I sat with the irony of me being back on a hamster wheel, despite all of my talk about not being on a hamster wheel. I had to sit with the possibility that there was something this big that I may have healed as much as I can, like by bringing awareness to it, by developing language around it, by learning how to catch it in the moment and ask for reassurance or ground myself in the present. Like, what if I healed it as much as I can? It never occurred to me that I couldn't fix it. It never occurred to me that it was a big scar that has healed as much as it ever will. It never occurred to me that I might have an emotional disability of sorts. Like, notice if you have resistance to that. When I first recognized the trigger in my adaptive patterns, I knew it was a big one. Probably the one that has unconsciously informed most of my relationships for my entire life. Like this is my core wound of my life, is my mother's abandonment of me. So it makes sense that I want to work through it and I want to heal it because it has created such a drag in so many relationships and in my own consciousness. It's created a drag. It informs most of the voices in my head It's where the majority of my like uncomfortable somatic sensations come from. Like, this is a big one for me. And I'm sure you have big ones like this too. But I fell back into an old pattern of perfectionism that healed means it's totally gone. It's resolved. It's no longer happening. It's over and done. It's cured. It's fixed. Like, I had unconsciously fallen back into that mindset, which is why I was on the hamster wheel. Because none of like totally gone, resolved, no longer happening, over and done with, cured. Like, that can certainly be a big hope that you have, or like a hopefully this is the outcome, right? But like, if that's the only possibility you're open to, you're going to be so disappointed. So, what does healed even fucking mean? What does it mean? Ask yourself this question and see what the voice in your head says. Who am I if I'm not healing something? Who am I if I'm not fixing? What is my identity even? What am I even here for if there's not something wrong with me that I have to fix? Whether it's a physical thing, an illness thing, a relationship thing, a trigger thing, whatever it is, who are you if you're not fixing it? Who are you if you're not healing? What if some of my complex PTSD adaptations are scars? What if they're as healed as they can be? What if I have emotional and spiritual scar tissue that I can't control or change? Right? That's not outside the realm of possibility with a physical scar. What if I could trust that I'll be okay even if this scar affects my life and my relationships? What if I am worthy of love and belonging, even if I never do a shred more healing? I'm still worthy. I still belong, even if I do nothing else. What if I let this compulsive heal this need go? What if healing means I learn to live with it? What if I channeled all of this energy of working on myself toward cultivating safe, reciprocal relationships where there's room to work out and work through my patterns? What if the scar wasn't a problem in my relationships? What if I didn't have to figure out how to avoid or control this pattern and I surrendered any beliefs that I have to prevent my scars from being seen? What if I had no shame about the scar? What if my open communication about my patterns is enough? What if taking responsibility for myself and how I affect others is enough? What would I do with my time, my energy, and my money if I wasn't focused on a health slash nervous system slash relationship problem? And what if there's nothing to fix? That was my own awareness and curiosity process. If you're curious where it took me, I realized that I held a limiting belief that there is some point out there in the distant future where I arrive at a destination of no more pain, no more triggers, no more complex PTSD, where I finally figured it out. As silly as that may sound to you, that was what kept me on that hamster wheel. That perfectionistic part of me that's like, if I just keep trying, maybe I'll finally fix it. Maybe I'll finally figure it out. I'm not trying hard enough. Clearly, I'm not doing enough. I need a different modality. I need a different coach. I need a different therapist. I need to read more books. I need to do this. I need to do that. Like, all of that energy comes from there is a point out there where you arrive at this imaginary destination and you finally figured it out. It makes sexy marketing to be able to sell people that kind of outcome. Like, just saying. That destination is where all the people want to get to when they embark on their healing journey. That's the goal. I've got it all figured out. But I am not existing so that I can magically arrive at an imaginary destination where everything is fixed and gone and I am a perfectly healed human. That sounds boring. And neither are you. That is not why we are here. That is not why we are here on this planet. That is not why we are here in this space at this time. So what if healed, like if we were to change our definition of healed, no more does it mean it's totally gone. It's fixed. It's resolved. It's cured. I figured it all out. Oh my God, I never have to deal with this ever again. What if instead it could mean I'm not obsessing about it anymore. I'm just present with whatever happens when it happens and I feel my way through it. What if healed could mean I recover from the trigger more quickly? Like it doesn't take me down for hours or days or weeks. What if it could mean I have language to describe my experiences and communicate my experience with my intimate relationships when it affects them? Talk about vulnerable. What if I understand the connection between my childhood abandonment wounding and how smart my body was to adapt in the ways it has to survive? What if healed could mean I accept however the scar shows up and I continue to offer myself unconditional love and acceptance? Because the scar doesn't make me a bad person. What if healed could mean I accept that my nervous system was programmed by a set of circumstances completely beyond my control and I'm just doing my fucking best? What if healed could mean that I co-create reciprocal relationships where I am not too much and I'm loved, I'm wanted, cherished, and respected always, including when I get triggered? What if healed in my relationships means all of you is allowed to take up space here. Your triggers are not a problem. If you need reassurance from us, we'll give it to you. So let's talk about scars. Physical scar tissue is often rigid, tough, and thick. If you've ever had surgery, you know what scar tissue feels like. It can be worked with and softened, but the body is still permanently changed, yes? Depending on the severity of the scar, the body may have to adapt around it or learn how to compensate in some way. We may be asked by other people who see our scar to tell us how they got it or tell them how we got it. And no one wants a scar. Not just because it doesn't look great, if you're concerned about that, but because it's a permanent reminder of the wound, the pain, the experience. And still, what other choice do we have but to accept our scars and figure out how to live with them? Like, that's what we have to do with physical scars, right? You may not like how you got it, but it's still there. And you still have to figure out how to live with it. And you may have to adapt around it. You may need physical therapy or, scar massage or fascial release or stretching or something like that to be able to live with a scar. A scar may have caused a disability in some way. Like people have to live with physical scars all the time. And there's nothing bad about that. So, of course, we know that the nervous system is capable of healing. We have all experienced the healing power of awareness and curiosity just being in this container together. And even feeling our feelings without fear is healing. And also, I don't know that it's realistic to heal everything if healed means we're getting rid of it, fixing it, we're making it go away, it's totally resolved. Like, I don't honestly know that that's realistic. And can both be true at the same time? Could a combination of awareness and personal responsibility and acceptance be the ticket off the trauma healing hamster wheel? Some of us wear our scars on our physical bodies, and some of us wear our scars in our emotional bodies. And we recover as much as we can, but it doesn't change the fact that the scar is still there. There will never be a time in my life where I don't have an ACEs score of 7. You know what I'm saying? Like, never. There will never be a time in my life when I don't have the lived experience of being in a tiny body and my mother leaving me on the side of the road. That created scars. It's so unmerciful and so not compassionate to expect that I'm somehow supposed to magically reach a point in my life where that doesn't affect me ever again. That's really unfair. Does this create some kind of spaciousness for you? Like sometimes people feel a lot of relief, and sometimes people are like resisting. Like there's a part that's like really struggling to accept this and let it go. Maybe this makes it seem like there's less of a ticking clock on the journey, I hope. So what does it mean to let go? I want to know in the chat, what does it mean to let go? What do you think it means? Acceptance. Okay. Slow it down. Hold it more lightly. Sure. Compassion. Yep. Less control. Absolutely. Yeah. And all of those things, offering ourselves compassion, not controlling things, doing the scary thing anyway, not caring what other people think, offering ourselves compassion, slowing it down, holding it more lightly. Like all of those things are really difficult to do sometimes because the ego loves to control. And the ego thinks that if it beats you up enough that you'll change something. So it talks to you really badly. The ego likes to go really fast. So slowing down is hard, right? Can I let go of the need to know what letting go means? Do you guys know? I can't remember if I've said this in this group yet or not, or if I've said it on the internet somewhere. I know I've said it on podcasts, but when I was in my dark night of the soul in the winter of 2018 and 2019, I actually Googled what does it mean to let go. Like everybody kept saying, like, Lindsay, just let go. Just go with the flow. Just surrender. You're creating all this suffering with your resistance. And I literally had no fucking clue what they were talking about. So I was like Googling, what does it mean to let go, spiritually speaking? Can I let go of the need to know what letting go means? Like, what if I figure it out on a moment-to-moment basis? If I don't know what it means to let go and I don't know how to let go, how can I let go? That's my resistance talking. So I'm about to take you through like my own, these are the real questions that I asked myself when I was drilling down the concept of letting go and what that means for me. So my resistance showed up. I don't know what it means to let go and I don't know how to let go. So how can I let go? Like, how do you expect me to accomplish this? So I kept going deeper. Here's my curious, Heiser Wiser self. Does a part of me believe that I can't do something without needing instructions? Like I can't know how to let go unless I have instructions on doing so. A source outside of myself has to tell me how to do this. Otherwise, I can't do it. Does a part of me believe that? What if letting go is a moment-to-moment choice? What if letting go means I choose to change what I can and I let go of what I can't change? Can I support myself as much as possible if I have to face things that are outside of my control or when I'm affected by things beyond my control, i.e., my scars, including my scars? I love the serenity prayer here. Even if you're not an alcoholic, it's a great thing to pray whenever you don't know how to let go and just accept what's happening. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Because if you don't know the difference, you're going to burn yourself out trying to change things you can't change. And if you're trying to change a scar that you have that you can't change, you're going to burn yourself out on the healing journey. All right, guys, let's take a quick break. Let's come back at 20 after the hour. So that's about a 5.5 minute break. See you on the other side.